Hi, I'm Bob Acton, the host of the Color and Ceramics podcast, and welcome to the show. I'm really excited about our interview today with Emily Stubbs. She is a contemporary British ceramicist based in York in North Yorkshire. She's a founding member of the Pika Studio, an artist-led studio collective of 23 artists, makers, writers, and thinkers set in an 18th century printworks in the center of historic York. She just does beautiful work, and we talk today about her work and her journey and the colors and processes that she uses to produce her stunning work. So welcome to the show.
Emily, thanks so much for joining us today on the Color and Ceramics podcast. I'm really excited about you being here, as I love your work and I love the colors and the depth of colors, your use of black and color. Anyway, it's pretty exciting for me to have you here. So welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm pretty excited to be here talking to you as well.
Awesome. Now, I wonder if you could tell the folks a little bit about where you are. You are in the UK, in England, of course, but tell us a bit more about where you are and where you work out of.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I am in the north of England, in Yorkshire, specifically North Yorkshire. So I'm currently in York, and I've been here probably for about 20 years now. Originally I'm from West Yorkshire. We're quite particular in Yorkshire about the east, north, south, west, depending where you're from. So originally West Yorkshire, which you guys might know, Last of the Summer Wine was a sitcom that is from the village I'm from, Homeforth. So had quite a lot of American and Canadian visitors there, which was great. I moved to York maybe 20 years ago, and I set my studio up. Well, at first I was on my own, and I was working pretty much from the kitchen table. And then a group of us got together, all kind of quite frustrated with kind of person. I enjoy company, I enjoy people. And so quite a few other artists, we kind of joined forces, and we set up a really lovely studio right in the heart of York, called Pika Studios. So we're literally, if anyone has ever been to York, and if you haven't, you must, because it's a beautiful city, very medieval. We are literally right in the historic heart. So kind of hustle and bustle all around us, but then you can kind of scurry into the studio, and it's a quiet, calm, creative place, which, I absolutely love.
Very nice. I was over there a couple of years ago, actually in Homeforth. I did a week-long course with Brendan Hesmondhall. Do you know him?
I know Brendan really well. We go back years. We actually used to run quite a large art show together until the pandemic. And actually, after I finished university, I went home to Homeforth, and it was my mum. My mum said, kind of pushing me out of the house, you must go and find a studio if you want to continue with ceramics. And she said, there's a studio just down the road, and go and introduce yourself. And that was Brendan. That was his studio. So Brendan actually was the first, he was the person who gave me my first studio. Yeah. All those years ago, 20 years ago, nearly.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a great week hanging out with him, and he really influenced me. So it's nice to have that connection with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's an amazing place, the Sculpture Lounge. Yeah.
Emily, you've been at this work for a while now, and it's beautiful. And I see that you're well received in the UK in some of your work. And I wonder if you could describe for people your work and what your purpose is, what you're trying to achieve with your work.
I think it all really started back when I was at through school, really. I think I'm from a very, very creative family, so my dad is an artist, so growing up I always kind of was, basically art was never not seen as a career choice. So I always felt like I was quite well supported, and And originally I thought I was going to go into painting. That was always my kind of love and passion was painting. And then it was when I went to a college to do, in the UK, we can do a foundation degree, which is kind of in between college and in between going to university. You can kind of do this really intense year where you get to experience all types of artwork and mediums and materials. And that's the first time I actually ever handled clay. And it was just, honestly, it was like a homecoming. I was like, okay, this is it. This is what I need to be doing. And since then, it's really just been a love affair with clay and just really pushing kind of my skill set and seeing where I can push the material. And I've done, I mean, if you look at my back catalogue, it's quite varied, I'd say, but there's always been a real connection with the surface of clay and the qualities that you can get from that, just, you know, those initial few millimetres of clay. So for me, surface texture, decoration, I kind of shy away from calling it decorating, but it's kind of, for me, the actual surface texture and colour and pattern and print. What I'm really kind of trying to get is that to feel like it is part of the clay and it's always been part of the form that I create. So in a nutshell, what I'm doing now is I focus on hand building. So I'm rolling out clay into slabs. I'm pushing things into clay, dragging things, scratching things into it, really layering up like beautiful colours through slips or underglazes, and then just really kind of trying to push that clay as much as I can. And then it's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle for me. It feels really intuitive, the way I work. It feels quite, I don't know, kind of like almost like the clay leads me. Maybe sounds pretentious, but it does. I do feel like the clay kind of does kind of dictate where each thing goes. And I tend to stick to vessel forms, although they're not necessarily usable. You know, you couldn't, you know, they've got holes in them, they've got gaps, there's, you know, purposeful holes. So it's not like they could hold water or you could drink from them or anything like that. I see them more of as a sculptural piece, as a piece of artwork, really. So yeah, that's kind of where I am at the moment. And I've just started to kind of tip into more figurative work. So I'm at the moment creating quite a few ceramic busts. So quite kind of silhouette shapes of heads. So they're not quite 3D, they're quite two-dimensional, but they stand on their own, they stand up. So they are 3D, but are very much a silhouette form. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at the moment.
Yeah, that's some pretty cool things, and I really can relate to what you're talking about when you said that sort of the clay determines what you're going to produce, and I feel sometimes I have an intention when I touch some clay, and then the clay has a mind of its own. So I think I know exactly what you mean. Hey, you know, can you tell us a little bit about who in the field of ceramics or other artistic disciplines has had an impact on you? Who's influenced you in terms of your approach?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think again, going back to my foundation degree, that the tutor I had there was really inspirational, really, you know, encouraging. And that we were only a small little group of about 10 of us in the ceramics department. So he was really great. He was called Warren Dunn, and he'd actually taken over the job from a really well-known raku artist, David Roberts, who you've probably come across. And there's definitely, I always think there's quite a house style that's kind of come from that Dewsbury Foundation from those years, and you can recognise each other. So artists like Rebecca Appleby, she was a few years ahead of me, and James Otterbridge as well, he's come through Dewsbury. Amy Hughes, I mean, these are kind of my kind of peer group, really. They're, you know, they're all graduating around the same time as I was. And we definitely were, you can tell that we are so influenced by teaching we had on that degree show, that foundation degree. And then in the kind of the wider ceramics world, one of my first loves was Gordon Baldwin. And I was really lucky, actually, when I moved to York, the art gallery here it must be about 10 years ago nearly, actually received funding to create the Centre of Ceramic Art, which, you know, usually would be somewhere like London, but actually it ended up being in York. And it's like this massive coup that we've got this beautiful, amazing display of ceramics literally right on our doorstep. And one of the first exhibitions they had there was of like a retrospective of Gordon Baldwin's work. And I've loved him since I was at college. And just to be able to go and see, you know, those vessels and pots that I'd seen in books or on the computer before, actually up close and in real life, that was just absolutely awe-inspiring. And he, you know, he to this day really influences my work. I think what I love with his work is how he interplays form and surface pattern. And it's kind of that, again, it's that kind of conversation between the two, between the form and the pattern or the surface that's part of that form. He just does it so beautifully and so subtle as well. You know, he's a really amazing ceramicist. And then looking kind of like, obviously Gordon Baldwin's, I feel, were kind of quite muted, really, muted colours in a sense. But someone who really, really inspires me with their youth, amazing like avant-garde use of colour is Betty Woodman. And I've seen a few of her pieces in the flesh. And again, they're just, you know, that kind of pushing the boundaries of functionality and creating ceramics, using ceramics like a canvas, the clay like a canvas, really, and kind of pushing ceramics from that traditional craft into very much an art form. That's really, you know, massively influenced the way that I work with my own work as well.
It's very interesting to have people who have really influenced us and begin to see how that influence begins to emerge in our work. You said that you match the color and the shapes and the texture to the form. And of course, you know, you can't just have color. You just can't have surface. You have to have form, right? So it's a bit of everything. Tell us how you think about that. Maybe you could describe for people some of the forms that you're using and how you think about applying texture and color to that.
I mean, predominantly I create vessels. I call them vessels because they are vessel shaped in a way. So very much a bowl shaped base. But from that, if you imagine kind of that bowl shape, I then build using slabs of clay kind of upwards from there. And for me, it is kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. And I roll multiple slabs out at once. So I'll have, you know, like the studio tables will be just littered with slabs of clay. And I'll kind of work from one slab of clay to the next, maybe doing a brush stroke onto one. I might be rolling, you know, a milk bottle top with a nice texture into another. And then I might be, I don't know, pulling like a, you know, a handmade kind of comb shape through another to get really nice textured lines. And then it's kind of, for me, I kind of start to cut the clay into pieces. And again, it's a very intuitive way of building. I kind of let the clay lead me. And I really, one of the things that I really love in my, to show in my work is contrasting elements. So, you know, that juxtaposition of, like a really clean cut, crisp cut piece of clay next to a bit of clay where I've actually left that natural edge where it's been rolled out. For me, those are really exciting parts of a pot. So as I'm building on top of this bowl form, I might have, you know, really sharp line next to quite a fluid, like kind of curved line that might be next to a torn line. Some of the edges I like to do a bit of both, where I'll cut halfway through the clay slab with a knife, and then tear the rest of it. So you get that kind of really interesting edges, and that kind of then alters the form, because it gives it this whole different feel, really. And then I'll also like to do things like create overhangs. So instead of like going straight up from this bowl form, I might start to kind of build outwards and create kind of an overhang or an angle, and then build up from that. So again, you get these very kind of quite brutalist, really, in a way, quite kind of built, very purposeful slabs. And I'll often leave the, when I'm joining the slabs of clay together, you know, scoring and slipping and pushing the clay slabs together, where that slip kind of squishes out from that join, a lot of the time I'll leave that visible, so that, you know, you can really see the building process. And for me, that's always been a really exciting kind of part of ceramics, is being able to see that building process, see the kind of touch of the maker, of the ceramicist that's built it. So yeah, that's, I guess that's what I'm kind of thinking of when I'm building. And then in terms of the surface texture, because I work on the slabs of clay when they're flat a lot of the time, when you do cut them into shapes or you know, into sections and start to build with them, those marks you've already made kind of become like accidental marks on the actual form then. So you kind of can't plan very much where they're going to end up. Sometimes, you know, they just kind of happen, and you place a piece of clay, a slab of clay, and that mark that you'd made when it was flat suddenly becomes a whole different mark when it's in 3D form on the side of a vessel. So yeah, and then again, when the vessels are built, I then add a lot more layers of slips or glazes. I'll scratch back through them again. So, because as much as I want to see the joins and I want to see that building process, I also want to bring it all together and make the vessel feel one. So once it's built, I'll work back into the vessel and start layering up colours, start doing an oxide wash over it. I might, you know, kind of drag my knife across three different sections, so it kind of links them and pulls them all together. And it is, I do very much see the each vessel as a 3D canvas. And I think, you know, that original childhood love of painting absolutely is kind of pulling through to my ceramics now. And I kind of feel like, yeah, they are 3D canvases in a way that you can hold. Yeah.
Yeah, I can really see that in your work. I'm looking at a piece of yours right now, and I think everything you've mentioned is really fit for me as I look at this piece. Hey, I've got a question for you. So I'm listening to you talk, and I'm imagining you in your studio. And of course, I don't know what your studio looks like, but I'm imagining you at a bench or a table, and you're working on these pieces. And you've talked about you using an intuitive approach. So you've got to combine this notion, this experience, I think, of being spontaneous, intuitive, with your experience and technical knowledge. What's your mindset when you're standing there in front of the pieces? What are you trying? What's your focus, I guess? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And we were actually talking about this in the studio today. And I mean, our studio, Pika Studios, I've had many different studios over the years, starting with the one at Brendan's in Home Firth. And they've been, you know, large, they've been small, they've been segregated by walls, or they've been open plan. And at Pika, where I'm at the moment, I have, it is, basically, York is, you know, space is a premium. And so we were so lucky to find this space and be able to rent it between a group of artists. So it's very much, it's very open plan. We're all on top of each other. I have my area, my space, which is just for me to use. Everyone has their own spaces. And it's exactly as you imagine. I have my benches, I have my... I've kind of separated my space into two areas. So I've got what I call the clean and dirty spaces. So when I'm in kind of the dirty space, which is where I build, where I'm rolling clay out, and I'm kind of, when I'm in that zone, I'm very, don't know, I'm very much kind of, you do get in the zone. I come home covered in clay. So, and some of the time I don't even know how I've got that covered in clay, but I am. And I think I do kind of just not zone out, but it's going to sound very cliche, but you do become kind of one with the artwork that you're working on. And especially because I tend to stick to just one color per pot. So I'm looking at maybe yellow. And so I feel like I'm fully absorbed in yellow when I'm working on a pot that has yellow glaze on it. And what I'm really thinking of is like depth of colour and like colour gradients, looking at, you know, going from something very white or light through to really deep, rich ochre yellow. Kind of that's going through my head a lot of the time. And balance, I think balance plays a lot of it. So I have my vessels on a so I've got my benches, and then I've got a few kind of turntables, and I'll have my vessels on a turntable, and I usually work on about two or three at a time, and I'll have them on turntables, and I'll spin them slowly and just sit and look at them and watch them. And a lot of the time I'll photograph them as well and look back at the photo. And then, and for me, it's all about balance. I think as you turn the pot around, for me, it's very easy to see when it doesn't feel right. And I think maybe that's what I'm always thinking of, is getting to that point where it feels right, where it feels like it's harmonious and balances, and, you know, the colour flows around the pot, the mark making flows around the pot. I think for me, a big thing is wanting to lead the viewer, the audience, around the pot. So I really love having my work on plinths in galleries, because you can do that 360 walk around them. Yeah. So I think that's kind of what I'm thinking about, a whole host of things. And then also, you know, chatting away to people next to me. And that's what we were chatting about in the studio today, to go back to that point, was that when you are in an open plan studio like we are, you have to be okay with failure, and you have to be okay with work not looking like it should, and for people to be seeing it in that, you know, it's not kind of like I'm hidden away and I produce a piece of work and show it to the world when I think it's perfect. I'm very much, everyone, you know, it's kind of laid bare at the studio. Everyone sees every kind of little working part of your brain as you're making. but it works well, and we all, you know, we're all so supportive of each other, and there's definitely osmosis of ideas and techniques. And I'm the only ceramicist there. There's, you know, the others are painters, collage artists, jewelers, filmmakers. So it's a real mixed bunch of people.
It sounds like that you need to have some patience with your work, that it's really important for you to take the time to look at a piece and to maybe review it from every possible angle, like from almost from underneath it and on top of it, in order for you to really feel like the piece is balanced and is working for you.
Absolutely. And that is actually a lot of the time, you know, I don't find that I sit a lot at the studio. I'm always stood, and I'll crouch down and look at it from kind of a lower angle, Then I'll stand up to be more level with the pot, and then I do a lot of looking straight down over the top as well, because that bird's eye view, especially because as I'm building the pots from that kind of the vessels kind of angle inwards a lot of the time from that original, that base of a bowl shape. And you get this really beautiful kind of negative shape where the void, kind of looking over the top of the vessel where the void is, you get this. And because I have the interiors dark or black usually, then you get this really beautiful, very crisp graphic shape when you look down from above. So I do. I look at them from all angles. When people buy my work, I always say to them, you know, you're not just buying one piece of work, you're buying multiple pieces of work, because you can spin that vessel around, you know, to your heart's content, and each angle is a whole new vessel. That's how I see them anyway. So I feel like, yeah, they are very intuitive when I'm building them, but yeah, they do take patience and kind of making sure that they do balance at every angle.
You know, sometimes you use a lot of black and white in your work, and other mm-hmm. times you're using some brilliant colors like yellows and oranges and mm-hmm. so on. How do you think about that? How do you decide when to apply a color or leave it with a black and white surface?
I tend to go through phases. I tend to probably once every year go through a black and white phase where suddenly I just strip the colour away. And I do find that actually when I do take the colour away and it's purely white clay, black slips and underglazes and a black oxide, I find then the mark making is kind of magnified. The mark making becomes the pot, really, the vessel, and the colour is always like, I don't know, the colour can almost sometimes kind of cloud the mark making in a way and almost obscure it, even though it's absolutely there. You know, big, I kind of like a lot of like crosses and squiggles and scratches. And when they're on top of colour, I feel my eye is always drawn to colour. And when I kind of strip the colour away and I'm just purely focusing on very monochrome, black and white mark making, that's when they really, that's when the mark making really sings, and you there's kind of nowhere to hide. That it is absolutely laid bare right in front of you. And I think there's something really beautiful about very simple, clean black and white images as well. I do a lot of monoprinting alongside my work, so I'll monoprint in black and white and then collage, you know, produce lots of collage papers, tear them up and stick them together, and very similar to how I build in ceramics, I will collage together paper, and I always feel like I'm most excited and inspired and enthusiastic when it is just black and white. For me the black and white ones are just like, and it's funny because I always people joke, I've got a friend who jokes whenever I usually wear very bright colored clothing, but if I go into like a black and white phase, people can sense it coming because I'll start wearing black and white clothes. Like I'll have a, you know, stripy black and white jumper on, and my friend will be like, working on some black and white pots, are we now? And I'll be like, oh, actually I am, yeah. So I feel it kind of feeds into my everyday life, and it kind of comes with the seasons, like winter, you know, now we've got snow coming tonight, hopefully. Oh, I mean, I love snow, so I always say hopefully. Some people hate it, but like when it's snowing and you've got a really crisp kind of white against the black night, and that, I don't know, there's something really lovely I just kind of replicate that. I try to replicate it in my work and in what I'm wearing, obviously, apparently. And then I think when it gets like spring and suddenly there's this like verdant green, and you know, England is absolutely, like they say, it's so green, And all of a sudden, there's these really bright colours popping out, like crocuses with bright purple and orange stamens, and you know. And then the kind of the season changes, and I think that's when I kind of suddenly embrace colour again and really get stuck into that depth of colour and interrogating colour, really. So yeah, I think it's probably seasonal is kind of how I'm led.
Yeah, sort of really influenced by what you see around you. And that makes perfect sense. I want to ask you a really technical question, and that is really around, you talk about using slip and you've talked about using underglazes. And I see from some of your work, you've got a crackle glaze in some and not in others. So can you talk a little bit about how you choose whether to use an underglaze or a slip and those kinds of things?
I love underglazes, and they're kind of, I guess when I was doing my degree, we didn't really use underglazes. We mixed our own glazes, and that was great. But the reality of being a ceramicist, you know, once you've left university and you don't have this like Harry Potter style chemistry room full of all these raw materials, I suddenly realized actually I kind of needed to kind of be a bit more simpler with the materials I was using. And for me, underglazes are they're so versatile, and you can get so many different effects. You know, you can water them down to a wash, almost like a watercolor. You can really kind of paint them like you would with acrylic or oil paints. You can add things to them. You can, you know, add crushed up clay, dried clay, to give them texture, and you can kind of break the rules a bit with underglazes. They're quite forgiving as a glaze, and then slips. I use slips a lot in, so I do a lot of monoprinting onto the pots as well, onto the vessels, and for me, slips and underglazes they're just so perfect for doing those sorts of techniques, so monoprinting onto the clay. I've even started screen printing as well, just recently, screen printing with underglazers, and they just, you kind of have to, I'd kind of dry them out to the right consistency to go through the screens and not bleed underneath. But you can get some just amazing effects with underglazers. And I think for me, then I love the kind of velvet feel that you get with an unglossed underglaze without putting a clear glaze on top. You get these really lovely kind of silky, velvety texture just from bare underglaze or slip. Underglaze more than slip. Slips are much higher clay content, so they tend to have that kind of, I don't know, like nails on a chalkboard kind of feel to them. Whereas the underglazes are quite a soft, a really nice soft touch when they're unglazed on top. But then this is where the kind of contrasting of elements come in. I'll use a clear glaze, but not over the whole vessel. I'll kind of brush it on with a really broad brush. So I get, I get those kind of painterly mark making on top of the underglaze in a gloss, so you get those contrasts between matte and glossy areas as well. And the crackle glaze, I actually, what I do, I went to a really lovely meeting about a month ago now, with Northern Potters Association. I ran some workshops for them, and there were a few speakers, guest speakers, and one of them was Linda Bloomfield, who she just did this really inspiring talk about glazing, and about how she's created this book, which is all about kind of unusual glazers. And one of the things she said was that some of the best glazers are glazers that you would class as being faulty or wrong traditionally. And actually, when a glaze goes wrong, that can sometimes be the absolutely best thing that could have ever happened, because it can kind of create this amazing effect. And And for me, with the underglazes and the clear glaze I use, I actually fire my vessels once, so they're all once fired. So everything is painted on or glazed, all in kind of greenware stage, and then they're all fired in the kiln. And because I think because I do it in just one firing, you get a lot of things happening with obviously impurities coming out of the clay, through the glazes, and the crackling can, I've started to be able to control it now, but the crackling is actually just a fault in the glaze. So they're not, I'm not using a crackle glaze, I'm using just a plain clear glaze, and then letting it either sit really thickly, I'll build it up into a really thick layer in areas, and then let that go through the kiln and let it cool fairly quick. I tend to take them out of the kiln, probably still at about 100 degrees, so they do tend to cool quickly in the room, and that increases that chance of areas crackling. And that's kind of like, I call it like a happy accident. It kind of accidentally happened once, and now I absolutely embrace it and love it. And pinholing as well, I mean, I think if I was creating tableware, I'd be an absolute failure because all my glazes pinhole or crackle or, peel. But they're the bits that I find really exciting and really interesting, and add that kind of unique quality to each vessel. Which, would be probably impossible to replicate again and again and again. That's the element I like, is that it's quite uncontrollable at
Yeah,
times.
it's kind of like your work is alive, right? And as opposed to functional ware, which is needs to be perfect in surface so that it's functional, right? So I get that. That makes a lot of sense. Now, given the work that you do, you once fire, you're using slips and underglazes and glazes and different forms. What challenge have you had? What's been a challenge that you've encountered that you've had to overcome?
I think the fact that I do only fire the vessels once, that kind of came about again by accident. Like classic kind of early stages of my career, I was like rushing to get some work through and through the kiln, and I just thought, you know what, I'm just gonna bypass the bisque firing and I'm just gonna go straight on with my colours and glaze and just hope for the best. And actually, I got some really interesting results from it. But one of the big downsides of that is that obviously you kind of, when the vessels are still in their greenware stage, they will happily take more water through slips and glazes. As they start to get drier, then you do risk, there's this kind of happy, it's like this little happy place where the vessel, the clay is not quite greenware. It's kind of gone past greenware, but it's not quite bone dry. And that's the optimum time for glazing, I find. I find kind of if I'm a bit too soon, the glazes slip on the surface. They can kind of feel a bit painted on. They don't kind of absorb in as well. And then if I leave it a bit too long and the vessels are already quite bone dry, then you risk popping the seams open by adding more water to something that's bone dry, and they can warp and kind of pull themselves to pieces, literally. So it has been a bit of trial and error over the years, but I've got to say, I don't tend to have many kind of disasters anymore. I feel like I've got that under control at least.
Sounds like you're a pretty good problem solver.
Do you know what? I absolutely love puzzles. I love problem solving. So for me, going through that, I guess quite. I don't record a lot of my kind of work, like glaze test tiles or anything like that. But I do a lot of problem solving through the kiln and kind of just, I guess, learning from mistakes. And I find that's the best way to kind of learn, really. It are through the
Yeah,
mistakes,
absolutely. I think all potters have to be great problem solvers, just because we're faced with so many variables that we need to control in order to make the peace that we desire to. So yeah, that makes sense. Hey, now could you, if you could think about a person maybe just starting off in their clay career, I don't know about over in the UK, because you guys have such a strong ceramics culture, I'll say. And over here where I am in Canada, pottery has taken off. There are lineups to get into studios and courses over here. So I think the pandemic had something to do with that, but it's become super popular. So could you give some more junior people who are starting off some advice? What would be one or two things you would suggest would be important for them in terms of their career?
Yeah, I think I do run courses, and I do see a lot of kind of people at that beginning stage of ceramics. And what I find that people do is they're very tight, or they're kind of with their ideas, or their kind of impression of what they want to make is very tight and very kind of solid in their mind. And they I feel like people can come in with a sense of, okay, I've in my head I want to make this pot, and that's what it's going to look like. And the thing is that if you have that kind of, especially at the beginning, if you have that mindset, you're kind of setting yourself up for disappointment, I feel, because ceramics is such a big thing to learn. You know, there's so many different aspects of it. And I first thing I say to people, and it's funny because I never give much information before a class or a course, and I'll have the odd person emailing saying, should we prepare something? And I just say, no, you prepare nothing. Like the least preparation is the best. When I get people in, the first thing I give them is a blank slab of clay, and I give them lots of different tools and things to make textures and marks. And I just tell them to, well, basically I'll get them to pick one tool or one kind of, you know, it might be a bottle top or it might be a bit of wire. I'll get them to pick one thing out of this box I've got, and I'll say, okay, I now want you to fill this slab of clay with as many different marks as possible from that one tool. And it kind of, I kind of do that because it loosens people up. It's kind of a bit of fun, and it kind of just gets them to start thinking outside the box. Like, you know, having a clay tool in your hand, you feel like you have to use it in one way, that it's intended use. Whereas the best thing you can do is to just play and just be experimental. And I think that's the kind of first thing I would say to people starting out, is to just kind of let go of that seriousness of kind of expecting to be able to make something kind of that you've had in your head for however long you might have thought about it. Just to let go of that, kind of put that to one side, just roll a slab of clay out and just play, just see what you can do with that slab of clay. How can you manipulate it? How can you, you know, add marks or textures? Can you roll it? Will it stand up at one? You know, like, just play with it. And I think that once you start doing that, that's when you start to get a real feel for the material. I think that's when I see people really blossoming on any courses I do, is when they kind of let go of their preconceived ideas. They just become kind of absorbed in that material, and just really, you know, they might not get a finished piece at the end of it. I always say, don't aim for a finished piece. Just aim for kind of, you know, fun and excitement and inspiration. That's what I tell people to aim for, because then the work will just naturally flow after that.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. I think that certainly all of us who started off years ago can relate to wanting to come in and have something finished. And so when you have that idea in mind, you can get tight. You can lose the opportunity to feel free and to play with the material so that you start to learn how to work with the material as opposed to thinking about what it is that you're trying to accomplish at the end. That'll come later, I guess.
It will, absolutely. Yeah. It does, always yeah, does. Yeah. It's natural.
Hey, Emily, thanks so much for spending time with us today. I really appreciated you coming on to the podcast and sharing some of your ideas with people. I think folks will really enjoy it. And we'll have all the links to your work, your websites and so on in the show notes. So I really encourage people to go and have a look at your beautiful work.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's been great chatting to you.
Thanks for listening to the Color and Ceramics Podcast with Bob Acton and his guests. Please help others find the podcast by subscribing to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, such as iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, or other podcatchers. And don't forget to give us a review. We'll see you next time.